Before we begin, let's take a few moments to remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's take a moment to worship the Devas of Devas, the Brahma of Brahmas, the one who liberated himself from the shackles of samsara and liberated others by preaching the Dhamma. So without further ado, let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme Buddha by chanting the Namaskara 3 times, all together and with me.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
So today at our monastery, today is Katina, or almost Katina Eve, because tomorrow is Katina, but today is when we start our chantings. And I wonder if any of you have actually seen the Pirith, I think we call it the canopy of the Pirith Mandapa. If you have, it is absolutely amazing. And what it reminded me was, and which I want to share with all of you, is how when many people come together with one intention in mind, and when that one intention is Nibbana, what sort of things we can get done. I think our devotees, Srila Shravakas, Shravikas, Vaisis, monks, Anagarikas, Anagarikas, all came together, and they had decorated it, and so in the afternoon all of you will be able to see it, and so will our live viewers. And it is amazing to see how much time and effort that everyone has put in for one goal. You see, this was energy that all of these people would have used to fulfill their desires, to seek, you know, to take anger out on someone. All that energy can no longer be released with desire, can no longer be released with aversion, can no longer be released with delusion. Instead, can only go one way. And that one way is what? Nibbana. So, literally, I think for the last 2-3 weeks, everyone has been coming together, and especially yesterday. Yesterday was pretty much our last day of preparation, or last night of preparation. And again, today is the day of no sleep. Right? Because today is what? An all-night-long prayer chanting. And so especially our organizing committee and most of our monks, Anagarikas, devotees will all be up all night. Today night, all the way until tomorrow morning, and it'll end after, I think, Guru Hongru's sermon, which is after lunch, which is well over 24 hours, or 12 hours at least, which is very special, absolutely special, because this is what we do for Nibbana. Now you can say, well, Pirith chanting, how can that and Nibbana be related? I mean, those are two different things. One of them is chanting, the other one is an understanding. How are these two related? But actually, these are very, very related, more than we can actually think. Because what we seem to forget is, what we start chanting, because especially in Sri Lanka and most of these, in these countries where Buddhist religion is a very big, strong thing, the pitted chanting is used more for protection. You know, it's something that people use to say, we don't want any harm from the unseen, right? We don't want any, bad things happening to us. So please, can the spirit bless me? May by the power of these merits, may I be safe from all these things. May nothing happen to me. And it's been used as a protection. But we forget that the pirit were words that the Buddha himself had preached. In every single stanza, this is a path to Nibbana that the Buddha had preached 2,500 years ago. If we were to understand it, will bring upon, it's also the contemplation. So for example, you're here today, at the start of the pit chanting, you're here, the monks go and say, and talk about the Pachisambhada, the dependent origination. And it was very funny because I remember 2-3 years back, when Guru Hamaru once was giving us a sermon, he was telling us that every single time he's in the Pirit Mandapa, right, in the Pirit canopy, every time he chants the Patisampada, he goes into starts thinking. Same with Nayakam, with Amadasa Nayakam. They go, when the moment they start chanting, avidya paccha tanha tanya paccha vinyana, they, even though it's in a very nice rhythm, this incites what? Contemplation inside of them. Because remember, the Buddha wanted one thing and one thing only. What was that? He wanted what? Nibbana. So he preached what? Nibbana. Now people can argue and say, well, he also preached things for a worldly life, how to live a good worldly life. Actually, if you think about it, he didn't preach to have a good worldly life. Instead, he preached to create a basement, a strong foundation for what? The massive skyscraper called Nibbana. So everything he preached was for what? Nibbana. So the entire Pirit, the entire sutras that he's preached, that's for what? Nibbana. So today, I feel, is a very meritorious day. It's something that, starting from the Pirit chanting, it's a very, very, very meritorious. And I think we are extremely fortunate, especially me living as a monk in the monasteries. I'm very fortunate to be able to do it every year. And coming back to the topic of the mandapa, every year, I don't know how, every year somehow our organizing committee and our decoration team find a way to one-up the last year's mandapa. One year after the other, after the other, after the other. How are they going to one up next year? I have no idea. So our viewers may be wondering, how does it look like? I'm sure our IT team will be able to put links and whatnot, however they need to show them. But I'm really confused how they're going to make it better next year. So next year, if they're going to have, I don't know, like amazing light shows or whatnot, I have no clue. Because we always find a way to make it one bit better. Because why? We are always on a journey to improving ourselves. Looking back 2 years back to today, not only is it just the mandapa, but the actual program itself. Because what we have to realize is we are always on a journey of improvement. Every single time we're trying to improve ourselves. We're not the same person that we were yesterday. That is the mindset that we all have. If not, something that we all should have. I am not the same person I am yesterday. I'm always on a journey to improve. One step closer to Nibbana. How can I do that? So the way we do things will always be one bit better. It has to be one bit better, because why? We are on a journey to improve ourselves, to make ourselves take that one step further on our path to Nibbana, and as well as everything else. Because as we go on the path to Nibbana, now our desire, aversion, delusion starts to decrease. When those start to decrease, that gives us more opportunity to do more. I want you to think back maybe several years ago. How much time did you take, or how much energy did you take to fulfill your desires, to fulfill your aversions, to fulfill your delusions? Simply put, normally, I think many people spend at least an eighth of their life, I think statistically more than an eighth of their life, in front of a TV or a screen. I think as time goes on, this will become larger and larger. Doing what? Fulfilling what? Their desires. Now, I know in a workplace, it's not easy. Right? People have been pushed down. People feel as though they're cornered, isolated. And therefore, incites what? Aversion, anger. And so what do? They try to release this and they use time and effort. And let's not forget delusion. This feeling of ego, what we do for ego. It's very interesting, especially on the topic of ego. It's only when you really start thinking about it do you realize how much ego plays an effect in our day-to-day lives. It's only when you take a step back and you really think about it. If not, it feels as though, no, ego? Do I have an ego? Maybe not. I do feel pride sometimes, but not all the time. But once you take a step back and you actually look at it, ego plays one of the biggest roles in our lives. But it's not easy to see in ourselves. It's easy to see somewhere else. It's always easy to see with other people how ego plays a role. For example, so there are almost three different types of ego. Right? One that you feel inferior, one that you feel superior, and one of them that you feel the same. So ego itself is something that we talk about, that, you know, it can only be there if we have ignorance. In other words, if we have this feeling of self, do we have something to compare with? And so you can really see how ego plays a massive role. For example, there will be many cases. If you look at your own life, and if you look at lives of others, there will be many cases of how something or an event in someone's life has made them feel that they need to be someone different. They have to do something so they're not like this. So a great example that's come to my mind is that a famous businessman, right, when they were younger, so their father was a real estate agent, creating houses in somewhere in Manhattan or in America. One day, one of his father's colleagues was creating a massive bridge in America, and for the opening, he had asked the father to come, and the father invited the son, and they all went to the opening. Now, this son saw that as the bridge was opening, there was a man standing at the corner, right, in the middle of in the corner of the crowd. No one's really talking to him. No one's really going up to him. So what does this child do? This now currently, I think he was starting business. he goes up to this person and asks him, like, how are you? What, like, why are you here? And surprisingly, the person says, well, I am the engineer of the bridge. I am the one who led the construction of the bridge. And then when he asks, like, why aren't you celebrating? The person just shrugged, said, I don't know. So this young businessman decided, I can't let other people trample on me. If I let other people do what they want with me, this is what's going to happen to me. So from that moment onwards, he will strive day in, day out to become the best. The best of the best. And he created massive buildings, right? Many, many brands with his name in gold. Right, very luxury brands. Because of what reason? Because of one event, which made him feel that if someone was to have control of me, I'd be pushed down. So what should I do? Push up. Now, not only this, when you look around, you'll see how ego plays. What sort of card ego plays? For example, let's say you have the opportunity to go somewhere where you've never been before. A great example would be, I want you to take a look back when, you know, you first came to the, or you first stepped foot at the monastery. How did you act? What cards were you playing? Now, something that we see very often is when an anagarika or an anagarika comes to the monastery for the first time and stays with us. They play a strange card, and it's very funny. Because we all have our cards, and we're playing cards, right? So they play the card of, you know, I am almost perfect, right? I'm not attached to this. I'm not attached to that, right? When can I attain Nibbana now? And they are in this state of, I need it quickly. I must do this quickly. And they are in almost like a bubble. And so something that a monastery continuously does will be in the first couple of weeks will be, just sit down here. Just relax. I remember especially for one of our newcomers, he's now a monk, but I remember when he first came, the first thing one of our Anagarika teachers was like, relax, go get some sleep, go sleep, right? Wake up after 2-3 hours and then we'll start talking. Why? Because when the cards that they're playing is not their real self or not who they really are, they're trying to play what the other person is going to play. So in the monastery, they have to play their best cards. Oh, I don't like cake. When inside, they're burning when they see cake. I don't like talking to others. When inside, they must talk to someone. They have to talk to someone. See, you don't realize how much we love talking until you're told not to talk. Or you're playing the card that, you know, I am a very good person. And you're playing someone that you're not. Because why do we play these cards? Because you're in a surrounding that you don't know. You don't know anyone here. And so you have to be the best that you think they want you to be. So for example, if you're at a different sort of community, now you have to play different cards. And you're always choosing which one are they expecting me to be? It's basically a card game. You're trying to predict what they're trying to play and play accordingly. But in the monastery, we play which card? At the monastery, which card are we supposed to play? Any card that you place down, we place what? Dhamma. You place another card down, we place what? Dhamma. You place another card down, we place what? Dhamma. No matter what card you place, we place what? Dhamma. So if you came in and you placed your best card, we place what? The Dhamma. You play your worst card, you know, you're playing that I am a maniac, I'm crazy. What do we place? Dhamma. No matter what card you decide to place, we place what? Dhamma. So usually after the first 2-3 months, now the real character starts to appear. Until then, usually our monks and our teachers would let you be, knowing that you're playing a false card here. But once you run out of cards, now you only have your cards, your true self, or who you truly are. So until then, we take the back seat and say, you do what you want. For after 2 months, we take role. We take charge. Why? Because when you come to somewhere new, you automatically have an inferior mindset. Oh, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to behave. What should I do? But then once you get to know the place, sometimes you can get a superior mindset. Oh, I know this place. Oh, these people I was with. I'm here for the last couple of years. I know this place. And you can play the superior card. Now when someone asks you a question, you think what? Oh, I know. I know that. And now you have another card to play. The card of what? I know this. I'm better. I'm bigger. That's why, this is the thing. This is why in society, they use this. Ooh. Once you take a step away from society and you observe society through the lens of Dhamma, you see how people play these cards. You see how people take advantage of what? Of these cards. So a beautiful concept that we learned about, and that our especially our monks who have been in business keep on telling us about, is this concept of the golden handcuffs. It's a very interesting concept, right? So it's a concept they use in business where, depending on your income, people have given you views. The company themselves will give you views of how your lifestyle should be, what sort of cars you should drive, how big your house should be. And so you have what I am aiming to become. And therefore you work hard. You work hard and therefore you work hard and you work towards your goal. And then what? You get promoted. Now with your new promotion, what does the company do? They say, okay, now you're earning this amount of money. Now you can't be driving a motorcycle. What do you need? You need a good car. Right? You just have a good car and this sort of house. And they'll have speakers talk about this as well, to give you this idea of what sort of person that you should be. Now, the moment you get this idea, what does ego feel? Ego feels very inferior. Oh, I'm supposed to have this sort of car. Right now, I have a motorbike. So what should I do? I have to earn this car. I have to find a way to get this car. And therefore, you're playing what? The hard worker. The one who gets all his or her tasks done on time, right? Who takes other people's jobs and also do that for them. For what? So you can achieve this. Once you work hard, you get promoted. Once you get promoted, you get more views. And the thing is, once you say, after a certain time, let's say they've given you views, now you earn this amount of money, you should be driving, a sports car. Now, why is it a golden handcuff? It's because once you get there, now can you slack off? Can you say, you know what, I'm going to slow down here? Because if you slow down and you get demoted, can you keep going with that view in mind? So with a low wage, can you still afford to pay for, a sports car? Or a petrol or diesel guzzler, right? Something that drinks like liters of petrols for a short journey. Can you still provide for that? Unfortunately not. So you can't slack off. Because why? You have to play these cards. So because it's golden, you like them. But unfortunately, they're handcuffs and you're stuck. Sansara is the same thing. Sansara is the same thing. It's a golden handcuff. Because of all the pleasures that you can experience, you handcuff yourself onto sansara, expecting someday I will get those pleasures. Again, playing the cards of what? Ego. Honestly, once you take a step back from society, do you start to see these cards? What sort of cards do I used to have? What sort of cards do other people have? And every time they play a card, what do you feel? Normally, when you feel, you know, when someone starts to act superior and places their superior card, you know, when they act as though they are the know-it-all or they are better than someone else. And what card do we play at the monastery? The Dhamma card. So we feel what? Compassion. We feel what? Okay, so they're feeling as though that they are greater than others. What can we do to help them? What can we do to help her? What can we do to help them? Feel what? Feel that it's just jati. It's just a sense of self. The only way, because remember, ego has three levels. What? Inferior, superior, and also equal. So where can you be without, where can you be when, where, what state or what sort of mindset can you be that is not in one of these three? There's only one. That is what? The mindset of the Dhamma. Because you can either feel inferior, superior, or equal. But when you understand the Dhamma and when you are applying and contemplating Dhamma, now you feel what? Neither. Neither do you feel inferior. Neither do you feel superior. Neither do you feel equal. Instead, let it be. Instead, you feel what? This is a sense of self. That's a sense of self. This is a mind. That is a mind. Which one is better? Is this rupa better than that rupa? Is this vedana better than that vedana? This sanya better than that sanya? Is this vijnana worse than that vijnana? Because when you look at rupa, vedana, sanya, sankarpa, or if we look at the mind, can one mind be better than another mind? That's like saying, can heat energy be better than chemical energy? Which one's better, heat or chemical? Or is light energy better than potential energy? Gravitational potential energy, which one's better? We can't say one energy is better than the other. Because why? Each of them have their own uses. Just imagine light doesn't know, imagine lights believe that, you know, light energy is very inferior thing. Instead of light, when you start giving heat. Now light, instead of giving light, they give a lot more heat. Would we enjoy it? Especially in Sri Lanka, would we enjoy it? No, we would want what? Can you give light energy and like no heat energy? Or if food decides to say, you know what, we no longer want a chemical energy. Instead, we're gonna have gravitational potential energy. So every time you eat, you just fall to the floor. I mean, if they think that this is better than the other, then life will become difficult. But in reality, no energy is better than the other. No mind is higher than another. So ego is definitely a topic. A very, very subtle topic. Because we can talk about big examples. But then we can also talk about the small examples. These very micro examples. The way we present ourselves can also be a form of ego. For example, as an anagarika, as whoever you think you are, there are certain things that, you know, you would say that I can do this or I can't do this. For example, if I asked you, okay, are you good at art? There'll be some of you that says, yes, I'm amazing at art. I'm next to Picasso. But then there'll be some of you who say, you know, I can't draw to save my life. But if you were asked to draw, those of you who think that they can't draw, because you want to maintain a certain level that, you know, I am this sort of person, then you'll be, and then you, every single time you're asked to draw, you say, I can't draw. I can't draw. You know, give it to someone else. I can't draw. Why? To maintain this level. To maintain, you know, you've got cards to play and you have to maintain the best possible score that you can. But let's say the person who went before you, who went and drew something on the board, the person before you, if they drew something absolutely terrible, now you feel, if they drew terribly, I can draw a bit better than that. So why don't I draw? And now you will offer. And you'll say, okay, I can draw. Only after you what? Compare. Only after you compare can you say that, okay, I can draw, I can't draw. You see this a lot when you associate very young children. Now, if we talked about toddlers, I remember growing up, I had many friends who had younger siblings. And so they'll come up to me with drawings and they'll say, oh, look what I drew. And I remember very clearly, one of them drew something like this. Very clearly, it was drawn exactly like this. No different. Now, so as a good person, what did I do? Wow, that's amazing. It's a very good... balloon. And they looked at me thinking, that's not a balloon. Oh, I'm sorry, what is it? It's a spoon. I was like, oh, wow, it's a very good spoon. Because when you're younger, you didn't have a place to place yourself. I mean, yes, you still have an ego as you were younger, but your ego wasn't as strong as it is now. So they think that this is, like, you know, literally children will believe that this is what? This should be put up on a museum because this is an artwork. This is amazing. They believe it because they look at this and they think, I've worked very hard for this. And it looks very good. It looks like a spoon. And actually, I remember months later, another child showed me this exact thing. They drew the exact same thing. And so what I say? Wow, it was a good spoon. Like, you drew a nice spoon. They looked at me as I said, oh, it's crazy. And said, it's not a spoon. It's a balloon for my party. I was like, ah. Because you'll see that children will draw random, very young children at least, toddlers, babies, right? They draw the most random pictures. And they'll label it. For example, they would draw like something like, and they'll label it and say, this is the airplane. And then all you have to do is say, wow, it's a very good airplane, but it doesn't look anything like it. But they don't have a view that it has to be top quality. It has to look exactly like a plane for it to be called a plane. They don't have that view. Therefore, they'll show you a picture and they want your praise. But because of our ego, we think, oh, okay, if we're drawing a plane, what does it have to have? It has to have this, and then it has to go like this, and it has to look exactly like a plane. It has to look exactly like a plane. Once it looks like a plane, now I can call it a plane and I can show it to other people. So for example, if a child shows you this and says, this is a plane, and if you start saying, oh my God, is that a plane? It looks like a scribble. Now, what will happen to the child is they realize, oh, I can't draw. Now the child's ego is at play. I can't draw. So when you ask them to draw next day, immediately they have this idea, what? I can't draw. That's why lots and lots of people, I think there's an actual account of the statistics of this, but there are many people who actually fear numbers. People can be scared of numbers, right? Why? Because growing up, every time they saw that this is wrong, what do they think? It's wrong. I can't do maths. I'm terrible at maths. So when they see a number, they think, oh, it's maths. I can't do this. Even though it's a very simple thing. And the more they do this, the more their ego is hurt, the worse they do. They don't try it. Because everything, whether it's drawing or whether it's maths, right? Even though they seem completely opposite, these are both skills. Drawing is a skill. Math is also what? A skill. If you were to draw every single day for 5 years, do you think your drawings will still look like this after 5 years? No. If you were to learn maths every single day for 5 years, do you think you'll still get every question wrong? No, it's a skill that you can improve. But according to this, because of this ego, we feel what? I can't do this. I can do that, but I can't do this. Again, because ego is at play. This pride is at play. The question of who am I is at play. I can't do this. I can do this. I am someone who is like this. I am someone who can't do this, or I'm not someone like this. It's very easy to fall into the trap of who you think you are. What sort of person you think you are. It's very easy to fall in the trap. For example, if you find yourself to have the tendency to feel angry, it's very easy for ego to say, you know what, I'm just an angry person. You know, no matter what I do, I'm always angry. And what do? You take anger and you lock it into yourself. Or it's very easy to say, you know, I'm just a very anxious person. Right? I'm always anxious about what's going to happen. And it's easy to take that and ego locks it in and says, this is who I am. I am someone who's always anxious. So, like I've seen this happen very often where people will decide and say that they are someone like this. So, very common is that, you know, people saying I always procrastinate. I'm someone who always tends to procrastinate. And so what they do is they take the issue, they put it, they lock it, and they say, this is who I am. And so they give them an excuse. Whenever they procrastinate, they give them an excuse and say, oh, wait, that's because I'm a procrastinator. They take it and they give it as an excuse now because why? That's who they are. They feel as though this is who I am. I am someone who always procrastinates, and that's how it is. Or ego can feel what? That I am. You know, the worst sort of ego, or one of the worst, I can't say the worst, is the feeling of good. Why? Because if you have the ego that says that, you know what, I am a good person, what limit, or you have no limit to show another person that you're good. For example, you do something wrong. If you have a view, or if you have the ego thinking that I am a good person, what do you do to cover it up? You lie. Because why? You want to show others that I'm a good person. I would never have done something. So for example, let's say you really wanted to eat cake. Right? However, you want to show your significant others that, you know what, I'm on a diet, I'm not going to eat cake. Right? I'm dieting, I'm not going to eat anything sugary, but you know, you were overcome by desire and you ate it. Now, what sort of things would you do to make sure the other person doesn't find out? I'll tell you what I used to do. My parents used to, growing up, I loved chocolates and sweets. And my mother would especially not allow me to have any sort of chocolate because she knows the moment I have chocolate, I become hyperactive. So what does she do? She has chocolate because she also likes chocolate, but she hides them in cupboards. She'll hide them in cupboards. Now, I wanted to show that to my mother that I'm a good person. I don't like chocolate. Right? I'm not going to do something bad. So I would find ways to do it without her knowing. Because why? To show others that I'm a good person. So what if I say, if I was overcome by desire, I would go into the cupboard and take the chocolate, but make sure it looks exactly how it was before I went in. So she doesn't have any suspicion. I remember once, she decides, you know, one day, you know what, my child is very good, right? I want to give him a chocolate. She opens the box and finds the box completely empty. Because what do we do to make sure that people think we're good? So if we were to ask a child, why do you do your homework? What sort of answer do you think they'll give? I do my homework because I want to learn, because I want to do well in school. No, most of the time the child will say, I'm doing my homework so I don't get told off by the teacher. Why? Because if I get told off, other people will think what? I'm bad. Again, what's that play here? Ego. Now, it is very, very interesting. It's very, very interesting. Just take a moment, because remember, for as long as the problem is not ours, right? Everyone's a philosopher. Once the problem is yours, you're in the crux of it, right? You don't see it, so you're not the philosopher anymore. Now you're now you're in the problem. But once the problem is not yours, you're the philosopher. So take a step back and look at the lives of other people. See how ego's at play. Now don't go and tell them and go, oh, this is ego at play here. But take a moment to take a step back and to see this. What do people do when they feel inferior? What do they do when people feel superior? This is why you'll see over and over again when someone feels inferior. A great example would be, I remember this very clearly because it was something that stuck with me. I remember one day my parents were showing me like an aunt and uncle. Why? Because you know they always show me people and say, look at this aunt and uncle, they're doctors. Right? You have to be like them. I had very Sri Lankan parents. And I remember looking at them and they were wearing just like a normal outfit. And I said, you know, these are doctors. And I was like, oh, these are doctors. And I remember seeing like an aunt who would always wear like very professional clothing. And so I like ask my mom, like, what does she do? She's wearing a suit. What does she do? I don't know. And when she goes and asks, she works at a corner shop. And I ask them, why is she wearing a suit? And they're wearing like normal clothes. It's because why? My mother, she didn't know about inferiority, but she says, because she thinks that she's below others. Therefore, she wants to do something to make herself feel what? Better. So she'll come to, maybe when she comes home from work, she'll be wearing a suit, whereas the doctors will be wearing, you know, they take their scrubs off and they'll be wearing just like a normal outfit. Because they don't need to show others who they are, what sort of person they are. So take a moment and look around to see ego at play. Because only once you see other people's egos can you actually use that to look at yourself. Once you train yourself to look at ego in other people, now you can turn that towards yourself. What sort of ego is at play here? What sort of ego does it do you have inside here? Do you feel superior? Do you feel inferior? Do you feel the same? Someone that you truly respect comes and gives you a task. For example, let's say for the Pirit, right? Someone's going to have to invite our monks to start the Pirit chanting. If you are given the opportunity, how would you feel and how would you act? If you feel the need to behave differently, meaning that, you know, you have to, you know, have a straighter back, head up high, and walk in a very professional sort of way, understand that's ego at play. But if you also feel that, you know, I don't want to do that. Give the chance to someone else. Give it to someone else. Understand that as well, that ego is at play there. Because why? Superior or inferior, both of them are what? Ego at play. So whether you're the front of the line or at the end of the line, both of them are what? Ego at play. Front of the line meaning because, you know, I want to be the best. I want to be the best of the best. You know, I'm not the best. I want other people to go forwards. So I'm someone who lets other people have a chance. See, if you can ask yourself, who am I? How do I define myself? And I remember someone telling me this long ago, right? Ask another person, who do you think I am? Like, how do you define who I am? Now, the first thing they'll say is your name, right? But you have to keep on asking them the question until they come to a point where they say, you ask them, like, why are you friends with me? Or why are you with me? Like, give me reasons. And they'll first of all, they'll tell you very superficial things. They'll say, oh, because you're kind, because you're friendly. But after a while, once they start running out of like superficial words, now they come up to the real core things and they say, oh, it's because I saw this happen. I saw that happen. Now ask yourself, am I that? So if you ask the question, am I that? Am I kind? Am I nice? Am I clever? If for any of these you say yes, understand that's ego. Because any sentence that starts with I is what? Rooted in what? Ignorance. I am very smart. I am very, very, very creative. It's very, very, like, continue to ask yourself, who am I? Because we all know, right? Because we've all listened to these sermons. And so we all know that I is just what? I is just what? A sense of self. I is just a sense. I just feel. It's a feeling. Because again, if we took two minds, which mind is better? Which mind is bigger? Which mind is more colorful? Like, is my mind, like when I'm angry, is my mind red? And if I'm sad, why is my mind blue? Which one is better? Which one is bigger? Which one is stronger? Which mind is stronger? Can we say that? Oh, I have a stronger mind than them. I have a greater mind than them. Can we say that? We can't, because it's a process. The mind is a mental process. The mind will arise and pass away. Okay. If a mind is to feel superior, we have to ask, where does that come from? Why does the mind feel superior? Okay, let's say, that's person A. Let's have blue to be person B. Okay. Let's say person A was to... Person A feels as though they are superior, and person B feels as though they are inferior. Or we'll take it the other way, because B looks bigger, right? B feels superior, A feels inferior, right? But we know, for them to be feeling what they are feeling, that this has to be something to do with what? They can only feel this in what? I mean, does person B's arm feel superior to person A's arm? Does person B's arm feel... Let's say person B has a longer arm. Longer arm than person A. Does person B's arm feel superior than person A's arm? No. Okay, person B has a bigger head than person A. Does person B's head feel more superior than person A's head? Person B's taller. Does person B's body feel taller than person A's body? Does it feel as though it's taller? Person B is horizontally blessed. Does person B's body feel to be better than person A's body? No, because it's nothing to do with the body. What's it all to do with? The mind. Now, remember, right? This is not the mind. Because is a mind a wave? Is the mind a wave? Is this the mind? No, this is a representation of the mind, because we can't show you what a mind is like. So the best, easiest way to show an arising and passing away mind, right? Something that is manifesting, we have a curve. But is this the mind? No, this is just a diagram representation. So at one point in his mind, right, we'll say at this point, B feels superior. And the same point here, A feels inferior. Now, the question is, where did that feeling come from? So, for a mind to arise, what needs to be at play? What needs to be there for a mind to arise? There needs to be what? Either a sight, a sound, a smell, a taste, touch, or a thought. Now, for argument's sake, right? Let's say both these people, right, A and B, were looking at The balloon and spoon. The balloony spoon. Right? Both of them are looking at this, the diagram, right? Now, when they see this, right, and it comes into contact with their eyes, and that goes into the mind, and they go, and that is sent through the optic nerve to the brain to the mind, and the mind now arises. Now, it's rupa. And this rupa, is it the same? Are both these rupas the same? Well, it can't be the same, because why? Because they both have different sort of, they both had two different vipakas. Because although the image, or this we're talking about here, the outside, beyond the eyes, even though the four great elements were technically the same, when it goes into the eyes, well, the eyes are not the same. None of us have the same eyes. We don't have the same nerves. We don't have the same rods and cones, and don't have the same brain. So when it goes here, we have two different types of rupa. Which rupa is superior? Which rupa is inferior? So let's first take. That's D's eye. It's A's eye. As you can see, I'm an artist. Right? B's looking, A's looking. This is the same for both of them. Both eyes are different. Now, we've already concluded that the body is not superior or inferior in any sort of way. Can it be superior? Okay. But you can say, however, can't eyes have different sort of levels of seeing? For example, some of us don't wear glasses where others do. Some people have 20/20 vision, some people don't have that. So aren't those who have 20/20 vision, aren't they superior to those who don't have 20/20 vision? Well, if you think about it, that's as if saying, is water in this cup and water in this cup, which one is superior? Because the both of them are doing the same thing. They're both holding what? Water. Although this holds more water. They still have one job, which is what? Hold water. So if you were to say that, okay, this cup is superior, well, you can say that. Because why? It holds more water. But you can also say this is superior. Why? Because it's a different shape. Or, you know, it's see-through. It's, I don't know, maybe it's stronger. Right? Again, you can say that, but that's depending on how you are measuring it. But in the process, the eye will have its own processes. So which process is better? Which process is greater? Can we say that? Can we say that one process is better than the other? No, they're just both processes. Okay. What happens if A is blind? It still has an eye. It still has eyes, right? A still has eyes. However, the nerve is severed from the eye to the brain. Now, which eye is superior? Which one is more superior? Because B can see, A cannot see. Which one is superior? Can we say that? Can we say that B is superior? No, it's a process. Two different sort of processes. This one has the eye connected to the brain, this one doesn't. So therefore, this A, B can see, but A can't. So the eyes are the same, right? Meaning they don't feel superior, inferior, or equal to each other. Does the eye ever feel that, no, I am the same, my left eye feels as though it's equal to the right eye? Does it feel a sense of, is it equal? No, it's what? It feels as though I'm a process. The I feels that, it doesn't feel, but the I, if it was to feel, knows that it's what? A process. So both these processes give rise to two minds. Although they are, right, the rupa received isn't the same, would it ever feel to be different? Or would it ever feel to be more superior or inferior? What about when they register? Recognize? Does it feel superior now? Does it recognize itself to be superior? Respond? Perceive? Now, does it perceive itself to be superior? No, as it goes through all of these, it feels what? It just perceives. The mind just perceives, oh, I'm seeing this balloon, or I'm seeing this spoon. The mind just perceives that it's something is there, and what I see is a spoon. What I see is a balloon. That's what it perceives. However, at a certain point, it changed. Something made the mind feel as though something is missing. What's that? Beneath this process, we have another one. We have what? Ignorance? Oh, you can't see this. We'll have person A's ignorance instead. Ignorance, and then what? Attachment, fixation, insanity, then jati. The moment it feels jati, it pulls, right? It makes the mind feel that something is missing. And therefore, it makes it feel that, you know, it fuels it up with something else and says, hello, I'm here, and I feel what? I feel what? And then it compares and says, I feel superior. And unfortunately, if person A also has the same process, again, something is missing. Because of ignorance, it feels as though there's a part of it that's missing, that there is something wrong with it. It alters the mind and it makes it feel that what? Oh, I'm inferior. But in both processes, it was exactly the same. Both minds are exactly... If you show this pen to yourself and to the King of England, would their minds perceive, or would their minds work differently? Do their minds work differently? No, they both have eyes. Right? We both have eyes, we both can see, we both can, it will come in, the light rays will enter our eyes. And then our mind will arise and then pass. Processes are exactly the same, but one mind will feel that, oh, it is the King of England, the other person will feel that it's someone else. Again, these are entirely just what? Feelings. So, what we have to truly understand is, this is what is actually happening in the mind. That this is why I feel what I feel. This is why I feel what I feel. I am feeling whether I feel inferior or superior. I am feeling that because of this. Because of jati. This is jati I'm feeling. Once you understand this is jati, instead of feeling that this is... Because before you feel jati, what do you feel? That this is me. That this is who I am. What you have to do is you have to understand that this is not me, this is what? Jati. In other words, sense of self. Once you understand that this is a sense of self, what happens is you realize, what I am feeling is just a what? Feeling. That this feeling of superior or this feeling of inferior is just a what? A feeling. Now we have to ask ourselves, where does this feeling come from? And you go back, and you go back, and you go back, and you go back. Because up to this point, the mind doesn't feel any sort of superior or inferior. It doesn't feel that, you know, I am better, I am worse, I am the same person. None of that. It just feels what? It just perceives, I'm seeing a balloon. All it is, it perceives that it's seeing a balloon. That's all fine and perfect. However, because of the underlying process, it feels as though something is missing. Because why? Ignorance is always looking for something what? Something different. Something separate. Something that is fixed. If I showed you these two pens, which pen is more superior, which pen is more inferior? Although you might right now say, well, these two are just whiteboard pens. One of them is blue, one of them is red. Even though you see these two different pens in your head, ego's at play. Because why? Sense of self is there. You feel what? I'm here. You compare yourself to this and you think, these are the two pens. I feel better than these two pens. I'm better than these two pens. Because remember, right? What happens is, you feel, because jati is a sense of fixedness, right? That jati is this feeling that something is fixed. Now, if you feel this to be fixed, what do you feel there? Because a mirror can only work if there is an object for the reflection. If you see the reflection of fixedness, what does it talk about? Well, that means there's an object. What words? It's a feeling of what? Jati. So this itself is what? Jati. That itself is what? Jati. You feel this to be fixed, you feel those to be fixed. That I am fixed. Because for there to be me to feel that, you know, there's something here, there has to be something here. You see, what we have to really realize is this is what is happening. We have to continue to show ourselves that this is what's happening. But then you can say, well, however, you know, other people treat me differently as well. I get, you know, let's say, as the CEO of a company, right? I get treated differently as well. I get, people welcome me by saying, you know, good morning, sir, or good morning, madam. And that makes me feel, what? Superior. Now, what is funny is, no one can treat you superior. No one can treat you inferior. Let me say that again. No one can treat you to be superior, and no one can treat you to be inferior. How is that? Because remember, that all of these happen because of what? Why did this? Why did person B feel superior? Why did person A feel inferior? Where did the mind start? object and I. Okay, so let's do this. Let's say person A is all right, let's say this, right? Person B feels person B tells person A, right, that you are person B tells person A that you are a fool. Person A, you are a fool, right? So in other words, and now person A feels really bad about it. Person A feels really hurt, and person A thinks, you know what, you know, person B feels as though they're superior, and then they're putting me down, they're calling me a fool. Are they though? Are they actually calling you a fool? Because you have to remember that what is the word fool for you? What part of fool actually hurt you? Because remember, fool is what? Before it entered your ear, what is fool? What is the word fool before it entered your ears? Just what? A vibration. Now, once it entered your ear, was your ears hurt? Once it entered your ears, was your ears hurt? Does your ears feel inferior? But then when it entered, you know, the ears turned this into a chemical, electrical chemical signal, sending it down the auditory nerve. Does the auditory nerve feel hurt and inferior? Does the brain feel hurt and inferior? Now, the mind rises. When the mind receives, registers, perceives, fool, does the mind feel hurt and inferior? Once it has ignorance and it goes through jati, now what happens is it makes this feel as though it's talking to who? Talking to? Me. They're talking to who? They're talking to me. Why is it? How can you call me a fool? I'm not a fool. I am da 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 da. And you automatically think that this is me. You take this and you make it feel fixed and targeted at what? Me. For example, doesn't the word fool, right? If someone calls you a fool, it depends on the person who's saying it that makes you feel hurt. Right? For example, one of your best friends comes and says, oh, don't be a fool. Do you feel hurt? Do you feel that, oh my God, they called me a fool, oh, curse the person? No, you feel that, oh, they just called me a fool, okay, that's fine. A random stranger on the street, right? You're just walking by, right, a shop and someone shouts fool. Do you feel hurt? No. But if someone that you may know very, may know kind of, or had a conversation and as you're having interaction, now when they call you a fool, now what? Whoa, that hurts. Now, technically, the vibration doesn't know where it comes from. The vibration has no idea where it comes from, whether it comes from a person that you know or you don't. So, like, let's say your enemy calls you a fool. Does the vibrations know it's coming from your enemy? So it thinks that, oh, I come from his or her enemy. I must hurt. No, who is the one who's doing the hurting? You feel hurt, but who is the one who's hurting you? Who's the one who's hurting you? You yourself. No one else can hurt you but yourself. No one else can make you feel inferior but yourself. No one else can make you feel superior but yourself. No one else. You are the control, not you, but ignorance is the control of that. Someone calls you an idiot. Now, who's hurting you? Who's hurting you? Only you can hurt yourself. Now, if you truly understood this, if you truly understood this, whether someone is saying fool, whether someone's doing something to make you feel angry, whether someone says or does something to make you feel good about yourself, also is from who? From yourself. So whether you feel hate or whether you feel love, no one can show you hate and no one can show you love. Both of these things are from where? Both of these things are from the sense of self. Because if I asked you, why do you feel that someone hates you? You can't just say, just because. No, because there's something they've done or said. Something that had to trigger this feeling of what? They've done this, they've said this, they did this, they've done this. And you can give a list of why you think they hate you. For example, they pushed you. For example, they said something to you. But every single time, all that happened was a mind arose and Jati thought that, okay, he did this, she did this. And they connect the dots and say, they've always done this to me, therefore, they hate me. For example, why does red roses symbolize love? So normally, if you love someone, you give them a red rose or a bouquet of red roses, right? You've probably seen like marriage proposals and whatnot with like massive bouquets of red roses, and they give it like, oh, please, will you marry me? And da da da. What's so special about red roses? For example, aren't white roses the same as a red rose, but they don't give the same feeling? So why does one portray, I remember learning in, I think, Victorian era, especially in the UK, that they used to communicate using flowers. Flowers was a means of communication. So for example, if you gave forget-me-nots, you were trying to say to the other person this. And there's actual books on this. Books on the language of flowers. Now, why does red rose equal love? Can red rose actually equal love? It can only make this. For example, if you've never had a view that a red rose is equal to love. Now, if someone was to give you a rose, what would you feel? Do you feel that they love you? No, you just feel that they gave you a red rose. Wow, well done, nice. That's why and I don't know about this day and age, but I do know that if a guy was to receive flowers, they don't know what to do. They get confused. They receive flowers and someone gives them a flower. They don't know what to do. Because I remember someone telling me that guys will only get flowers at their funeral. Because why? In our rule book, the book of our mind of how things are supposed to be, we don't have that view with us. But we have the view, red roses equal love. And therefore, when you receive a red rose, Jati immediately feels that the person who gave it to you is what? They like you. So, who created that feeling? The other person? Or yourself? So, even if a feeling of hatred, someone hates you, someone loves you, someone despises you, someone can't get enough of you, is all created where? Where is that? All from the sense of self. All entirely from the sense of self. They create this feeling. Because remember, Jati is the what? Jati is the storyteller. So what Jati does is it starts to connect dots and says, okay, this has happened, that has happened, this has happened, that has happened, this is and this, this. All happened from the same person. That means this person loves me. This person hates me. This person can't stand me. But really remember, every single moment is a very discrete point. Every moment is discrete. So one moment a mind will arise and pass away. Is it the same as the next mind? No. This mind and next mind are two different. One mind arises through sight, one mind arises through sound. But Jati connects them and says, oh, same thing's happening. Because the Jati is a storyteller who weaves all this together and says, this is the final outcome. This teacher hates me because he or she always tells me off. Where does that come from? Jati. You know what? I can never get this right. Where does that feeling come from? Jati. Today I had a terrible day. Tomorrow I had a terrible day. A great example would be, don't you have lucky days and unlucky days? Some days are really lucky, everything goes according to your plan. Some days are really unlucky, nothing goes according to your plan. Where does that feeling come from? The weaver of Jati. Something good happens in the morning and therefore you automatically. For example, I remember, we have these views that, if you find a coin on the floor, it's a lucky penny. Lucky coins. Right? I remember one day going to school, right? We had an exam coming up and there was a coin. Right? I pick it up. I got a coin. You know what? Today's a lucky day. So when going through the exam, I was really happy because why? I have a coin, that means I'm lucky today. And I do the exam and when I got the results, I did well. Is it because of the coin? Is it because of the coin? No. But what does Jati do? Jati says, you've done well. You found a coin. Coin equals well. Coin equals good luck. This coin is what gave you the good luck. Keep the coin with you. I remember, I had this coin that was always with me because why? It was supposed to be lucky. And I remember once I left it in a in a pocket. My clothes went to the wash. And I come out and I've lost the coin. And the next day, what day was that? The unlucky day. So anything bad that has happened, Jati weeps and says, that's because you've lost your good luck. You've lost the coin. It must be because you don't have the coin. Because of Jati. Even though good things had happened that day, you focus on what? The bad things. Jati focuses on the bad thing. Even though you did the test, but you were stressed, right? Someone probably shouted at you. You don't remember that. You remember the good things. Because Jati ties them all together and says, coin equals good luck. See, the more good things, because we tend to forget things that that don't match with our view. We seem to forget those. That's dangerous. For example, normally people have a view that people with glasses are smart. And you look around and every single person you see is smart to have glasses. But do all people smart have glasses? No, but automatically, because you have a view, you see the world in that lens, and therefore you see that and you automatically think this. So when you think this coin is lucky, this coin must be very lucky. Then now what? Now everything good happens is because of what? Coin. Because of Jati. Coming back, right? Whether you hear the word fool, who is calling you a fool? Who is calling you a fool? Okay. I say the word fool on this microphone. It comes out of the speaker. Who am I targeting it to? Who's my target? Did anyone feel hurt? Fool. Anyone feel hurt? Why not? We're all hearing the same thing. But if I was to look at someone, it's like, you're a fool. Now we automatically think what? Oh, we're talking about this person. It has to be this person. Where did that feeling come from? You see, no one can actually hurt you. Then you can say, well, they can physically hurt us, can't they? They can physically hurt us. Someone can physically hurt us. So take a stick and they hit you and you feel pain. Really? Are you really feeling pain? Because they hit you. Is that the only reason why you're feeling pain? Now, I was told, right? I was told this, and some of our monks. So, a group of our monks, they went to a meditation, a week of meditation, and one of them brought back a flower, a small yellow flower. And this yellow flower, I found out, is a very special flower. Why? Because it was what they used to use as like a general anesthetic. Or no, sorry, local anesthetic. Meaning, you take it, you crush it, you put it on a place, and that place, in a couple of minutes, feels numb. That's what I used to use back in the past. And I was actually amazed. I was like, I didn't think that we had, plants could do that. But if you had applied some anesthetic, right, and someone hit you there, would you feel pain? Would you feel pain? So is it because of the person who hit you that you felt pain? I remember, there was a case study of I can't remember her name, but she can't feel pain. So through her entire body, there'll be cuts, bruises, burns. I remember, I think it was an interview that she had, and she was cooking something, She smells something off. Right? She looks and she finds her hand on the hot stove. But she doesn't feel pain, because we need pain to survive. So there's nothing wrong with pain. But it's not because of a person or a thing that you feel pain. It's because pain is what? A process. So can someone hurt you? No, they can only add a cause to the process. Hurting will happen. Now again, this is not me saying that, you know what, hurting can only happen, you can't hurt someone, so let's go around and then take sticks and beat everyone up. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that, you know, hurting is also what? You know, hurting is a part of the process, but he hurt me, he hit me, he kicked me, he pushed me, she did this, she did that. All comes because of what? Jati, because we're always looking for, where did it come from? Always looking for someone or something to blame. That's why in the past, right, before we understood how weather worked, we wanted to blame someone for the rain. We were having an amazing day and it started to rain. Whose fault is that? There must be someone in control of this. Curse the rain gods. It's not raining. Please, rain gods, please make it rain. Because why? We want someone to blame. We want someone to hope or to have faith that they're going to make it rain when we need it to rain. We need someone. Because Jati cannot accept that it was a process. Thanks to science, we realize that rain is a process and therefore we no longer dance around fires to make it rain. We look at the forecast and we say, oh, it's going to rain on Tuesday. And we prepare that way. Because we know it's a process. But still, even though we have forecasts, right, and we know that it's a process, we still feel that, no, there's something responsible. That something has to be responsible. But if we ask who is responsible, no. We all have answers. Just like that penny, right? The coin that gives good luck. We always want something, we always want someone or something to be the cause, be the reason. We don't like the idea it's just a process. We don't like the idea that everything's happening due to a process. Because what is life? Life is basically a movie that just running. Unfortunately, because of ignorance, you feel that you're the director. Cut, 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 cut. Rewind, we're taking this shot again. We want to change what's going on in front of us, not realizing that this is just a process. Your mind is just the observer. The mind is just the observer. But no, it feels as though it's the main character, director. It feels like the director, the main character, and everything. It feels as though it's in charge. See, what we have to do is we have to come back. We have to go back and understand that this is a process. No one can hate you. No one can love you. No one can make you feel good. No one can make you feel bad. The only thing they can do is what? Technically, they can't do anything. Because what is this? What is this? This is a vipaka that came because of what? Karma. So you can't hate, you can't love. That's why our teachers are able to have infinite compassion towards who? Wrong question. Towards everyone. Towards any mind. Infinite compassion. Because why? Once you realize that this is just a sense of self, once you realize there is no one, how can How can a mind, if it realizes there's no one to love, there's no one to hate, how can a mind direct it to someone? That's why your teachers, whoever is in front of them, that's why the Buddha will travel miles and miles for just a single person. Why is that? Out of great compassion, infinite compassion. To who? To them? To minds. So the next person, so next time someone's called, tells you something that makes you feel angry, understand, it's not them who makes you, who's making you angry. Who's making you angry? Oh, technically, don't blame yourselves. You're not in fault here. Who's in fault here? Blame ignorance. Someone hurt you. Whose fault is it? Someone screamed at you. Whose fault is it? Someone's calling you names. Whose fault is it? Wait, wait, you gave the wrong view. Hold up. Ignorance. Whose fault is it? Ignorance. Someone is running after you with a knife trying to stab you. Whose fault is that? Ignorance is. Every single time, right? Ignorance is a fault. Someone's coming with, I don't know, with a massive bouquet of flowers running towards you to give it to you. Whose fault is that? Because are they actually doing it to you? Can someone give you a massive bouquet of flowers? No, all you can do is receive, register, recognize, respond, and perceive. But who gave you it? Causes aligned for it to happen. You're walking down a path. Suddenly, a gust of wind came by and gave you a bouquet of flowers. Who gave it to you? Do you feel that, wow, these trees, they love me? No, you feel what? It's a coincidence. That it's just a random thing that happened. But even that is what? Receive, register, recognize, respond, and perceive. Even that is what? A process. So whether anything happens to you, whether you feel as though it's happening to you, whose fault is that? See, we all have a common enemy, don't we? Whether someone makes you feel good or whether someone makes you feel bad. Whether someone makes you feel love, whether someone makes you feel hate. If someone makes you feel great or someone makes you feel terrible. We all have a common enemy. Our common enemy is who? Ignorance. Our common enemy is who? Ignorance. That's why we all come together to fight the one. That's why we can all work together for one thing. And that's why we can make beautiful creations like the Prith Mandapa. Because why? We all come together for one thing. We all have just one enemy. Now, shouldn't desire also be an enemy? Shouldn't aversion also be an enemy? Shouldn't delusion also be an enemy? They are not enemies. They're just minions. They're just henchmen of what? Ignorance. So if desire does enter, understand that this is what? A henchman of who? Ignorance. If you feel... See, you should never be angry that you feel anger. You should never feel sad that you feel desire or aversion or delusion. Because they're not the fault here. you know what, I shouldn't be feeling this. No, you should. Why do you feel this? Because of our enemy, ignorance. Because of our enemy, ignorance. You should fight until when? Until when? When do we stop fighting? When should we stop fighting? Either two things can happen. Either this is gone or we are gone. Until then, we fight. We have an enemy, we fight. Because that's what we've been doing our entire lives. When we have someone that we don't like, what do? Do we let them be? No, we go against them. We fight. We have a common enemy. So what should we do? Fight. See, this enemy is sneaky. Because why? This enemy has been with you your entire life. This enemy has been with you your entire life. Since the day you were born, you had this enemy, right, riding on your shoulder. And it's only once you see this enemy, once you realize that this is the enemy, that you start to attack. But unfortunately, because it's been with you your entire life, you sometimes forget it's there. But slowly, it's stabbing you in the back. So we need to fight. We need to come and understand. See, that's the best part about this. It's only an understanding. Because we don't actually need to go take a sword and start fighting in a battle. Because there's no battle to fight. There's nothing physically that you need to do except what? Understand. Create the environment to what? Understand. Now, a couple days ago, we had a really good question by one of our 18-mind Sanagarikas. And they were saying that, you know, to attain Nibbana, don't you need merits? And like, isn't that, because if you think about it, everything is cause and effect. There's nothing that you can do. You can't attain Nibbana. So how can you attain Nibbana if you can't do anything? It's a good question. Like, if there is no me, how can I attain Nibbana? So it's a very good question, isn't it? Because why? What do we want to do? I want to attain Nibbana. But if there's no I, how can that happen? See, this is our 18-mind Anagarikas. Our Anagarikas. Our monks, and everyone. That's why. This is how you know we all have the same enemy. We have good questions. Good questions have good answers. And this was in one of the nyayas. So another one gave a good answer. Because I can't attain Nibbana. But Nibbana is a process. Even though, you know, I can't strive to attain Nibbana. Nibbana is a process. So what will happen is, according to your merits, views are planted. And a mind will work according to what? Our views. So for example, remember the red roses, right? You are planted the view red roses mean love. Therefore, when someone gives you a red rose, you think, oh, this person loves me. Same thing as time, as you'll get a view that, you know what, you have to contemplate. And that view is in place. Now, you can't contemplate. Contemplation must happen. So does that mean, you know what, we should sit back, relax, and hopefully one day your contemplation will happen? See, that idea also came because of what? That idea is also what? A view. Oh, that means, you know what, if I can't attain Nibbana, and Nibbana happens, contemplation happens, Like, well, I can just sit back, relax, and one day contemplation will happen. That is true. Because contemplation can only happen. But you need to have views. You need to have views to be planted in the mind. And according to the views, different thoughts will arise. Different thoughts and different processes will arise. For example, Guru Handru will always say, try to find a way to always listen to the truth sermons. Now, what does that do? What does that do? That gives you a view. Now, your mind now thinks accordingly. If I say blue pen, do you think red pen? No, you think blue pen. And so, therefore, you now see, oh, it's a blue pen. Same thing when Guru Handra says, listen to sermons. Right, when your teachers tell you, go and think about this. All they can do is plant a small seed. Your mind will go with it according to your merits. According to your merits, you will do accordingly. That's the thing. Something that I remember one of our monks saying a long time ago. And it was, to get a good teacher, you need what? A ton of merits. But you need more merits for what? To do what your teachers say. You need lots of merits to get a good teacher, but you need more merits to do what your teacher says. Because why? Are you the one who's doing it? It happens. So all that is, it's a view that's planted, and the mind runs as far as it can with the amount of merits it has. And we need more what? We need more views. This is the thing. All that can happen is we get more and more views to attack. More and more weapons to attack. We're using these weapons, we attack. Because it's not a physical fight, it's a mental fight. Sometimes you will have to go against things that, you know, you say you really love chocolate. Right? For example, let's say you really love chocolate cake. Right? The example that we always have, but today we'll get chocolate cake, don't worry. You don't think so? Wait, you'll get chocolate cake today. Now do you think, yes, chocolate cake. Finally, chocolate cake. But you know, because now you've listened to sermons and you have a certain understanding, you know that the chocolate cake isn't what gives you the pleasure. But you know by contemplating, you're ruining the pleasure experience that you're going to get when you eat the chocolate cake. It's something that something the mind will always go to. Is like, I'll have the chocolate cake. I'll contemplate afterwards. Right? But I'll have the chocolate cake. Why? Because I want to experience the pleasure of the chocolate cake, and afterwards I'll think about it. Afterwards, of course, we think about it, right? Like, we take time out of our timetable and we say, for the next 5-10 minutes, we're going to think about chocolate cake, right? That's how it works. I think this is why it's a hard war. Honestly, no matter what war humanity has, I remember statistically, I think throughout our entire human existence, right, in the history of the world, I think we've only had a century, 100 years where we were war-free, right? 100 years where we were war-free. Every year before and after, we were always at war. But I'm telling you, we've practicing the path is more difficult than that. Because war is against another person. Practicing the path is against who? Yourself. It's going against yourself. So once you have an opponent, how can I fight with something that I like? This is why, you know,
You have, you know, amazing generals and soldiers who've done so much, snipers that can snipe like many, many miles away. But the general for the war against your defilement has to be stronger. The sniper against your defilements have to shoot more sharper. The warriors have to fight day in, day out. The thing is, if you let defilements come through the town, go through your town, not only will it wreak havoc, not only will it wreak havoc, but also it will plant seeds for future attacks. That's a danger. No. Wars can happen and they'll stop one day when everyone says, okay, let's have a truce, right? No, we're not going to kill each other. But when it comes to defilements, defilements will always come up to you and say, truce, right? We're not going to do anything. But the moment you sign the truce, right, you sign the treaty, they come attack. So here's the thing. This is a war that you have to fight, right? Fight using as many views as you possibly can, right? Take as many views and take as many weapons as you possibly need to fight. Because when the war is over, that's the last war you'll ever fight. Because now you don't feel someone said what? Fool. Now when someone's calls, when you hear fool, you're no longer sad. You're no longer at war with them. When someone says something to hurt you, someone does something to hurt you, you no longer need to fight against that. So coming back to where we started, today is Katina. Right? If you've had a sneak peek at our mandapa, right, you'll see how amazing it is. Because all the energy that our monks, Anagarikas, Siddhashravikas, Shravikas, our devotees all had to fight against this, they now use for the betterment of themselves and for countless beings all across the universe. Because, for example, a prit chanting, when they invite, you know, the countless sentient beings, the devas and brahmas, to come and listen to the prit, usually they say that every single tree is covered. Because why? Everyone is seeking for the same thing. Every being is seeking for the same thing. A way to get out of misery. A way to get out of suffering. A way to stop samsara. So ladies and gentlemen, we have a common enemy. Now all we have to do is fight. Okay. So again, a reminder that today is Katina, right? So I'm pretty sure our viewers online would get this message late. Because I think this is given on Sundays, which will be on the day of Katina. I think after the Katina ceremony. So there's no point talking about Katina now for the online viewers. But please do stay and do enjoy and accumulate as much merit as you possibly can. Right? As much merit as you possibly can. Whenever something's happening in your hearts and minds, do it to the maximum. You may not be the person who goes to invite the Mahasangha to start the prayer chanting, but in your minds, invite them. Invite the Buddha and, you know, the Sariputta Maharatan ones, Mughal Maharatan, and the entire Mahasangha since then to start their chant. And chant these words I think we will also be putting these words on a PowerPoint, right, while the chanting is going. So you'll be able to read with us, right, chant with us. Because remember, this is an opportunity that is very rare. And something that's very, very difficult to wrap your head around is how rare the word Buddha is. Because I know I've grown up in a Buddhist household and, you know, in a monastery where you hear the word Buddha at least thousands of times a day. But when you hear that, you know, the word Buddha, it was one of the rarest words that you've ever heard in this samsara. That's very crazy to hear. So we are very fortunate to be able to have this opportunity. So again, use this opportunity. And like, needless to say about the cardinal robe, I think everyone will have an opportunity to sow at least a small portion of it. And those merits, again, are... You can't measure how much merits that is. For example, I think Venerable, if I remember correctly, Nagita, became an arahant because in one lifetime he had sown cardinal robe. So everyone will be able to get a chance to do that. And again, the Pirith reds, the Pirith water, all of this. So today and tomorrow are one of the most meritorious days, and I do highly recommend for all of you. Some of you don't have a choice, right? So you're going to have to be there. But others, please do stay. Right? Please do and accumulate as much merit as you possibly can. And then with that, let's take a few moments to transfer our merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a few moments to transfer all our merits that we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds. Today, so first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be and receive Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chief players of the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to no path and committed themselves to betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns resident in local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come in or shine. Let's also take a moment to transfer our merits to Guru San Nansi, as well as other monks resident in the monastery, as well as Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who made great effort to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by translating literary sermons, sharing them out to others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any of them born in the willful plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. This will take a moment to transfer merits to our devotees, friends of the monastery who forsake merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, deserve of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, or medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-hows and their well wishes. May the Padi merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, and to all those who have been friends who have helped us, support us, assist us in shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they heal in physical and mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Take a moment to transfer merits to the devas, brahmas, spirits and demons, primary Sakudeva, as well as numerous gods and deities, who have committed to protect and fulfill the Dhamma of the Sasana. Let's not forget, among them will be our garden deities who keep water alive us and keep us our palms way. May the power of the merits, may they prosper and divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. As well as taking chance of merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all that have been friends of having to us in the infinite long journey in Sansara. As well as taking chance of our merits to The members of the armed forces was the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of your nation. May all those who lost lives in the war be the friend of foe. Rejoice in America today. Let's also take a moment to answer mayors to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in a long journey in samsara. May the power of these merits, if anything been born in the upper plane, may they redeem themselves and born in the upper plane. May by the power of merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble for path, and attain supreme bliss of nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits required throughout the day. We be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat Mahinuvanses in this blessed land itself. And finally, may through all the power of all the merits required throughout the day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success become a Arhat Nuvanse or Arhat Mahinuvanse in this very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. The Mahasangha will now transfer the blessing to you.
Raga ginnen midetnva Dvesha ginnen midetnva Moha ginnen midetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravitnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravitnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravitnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravitnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha ghini niveva Moha ghini niveva Nivan sap labeva Nivan sap labeva Nivan sap labeva
Tunrangi සුසියනන්ත මහ වංගුර බැලෙ සිය ලෝක සිය සත්‍යෝම නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛින් සුගතරත්වා